Chapter 3. For the first couple days back at my folks' house, I just chilled. With no duty shift to worry about, I slept late, I did chores around the house and in the barn, I went running in the woods instead of on a treadmill. Running was kind of awkward because at least two FBI agents came with me. One agent was a woman, and quite attractive, but they were all business and not in a mood for chit-chat. It felt good to sprint the last quarter mile back to the house and leave them gasping for breath behind me. One morning, my body got me up early, so I went downstairs and made coffee, puttering round the kitchen until my parents got up. Skippy startled me by whispering in my earpiece.
"Joe," he hissed, "be careful. Some sketchy homeless guy broke into your parents' house."
"What?" I kept my voice down and stepped beside the fridge.
"How did a guy get in with the freaking FBI watching the place?"
"I don't know. Be careful. He looks dangerous." "Homeless doesn't mean dangerous, Skippy," I chided him. When the economy collapsed after Columbus Day, a lot of people had lost their homes, and my parents had taken in several families to live with them.
"I know, but this guy hasn't bathed in weeks, and his clothes are all torn and filthy, and he has a crazy look in his eyes."
I looked down at the shirt I was wearing, which was well-worn and had a few food stains from dinner last night. "Where is this guy?"
"In the kitchen. Be careful."
Skippy, that's me. Damn it, I haven't shaved for a few days. I'm on leave."
"That's you?
Ugh, damn, you have let your standards totally slip. The army would be ashamed of you. That scraggly fuzz on your face is supposed to be a beard."
"It's stubble." I rubbed my chin defensively.
"Huh, really?" "Yes, really. Chicks dig the bad boy look, Skippy."
"Do they dig bad-smelling boys?"
"I showered yesterday."
"You showered after you went running, then you worked around the yard all day.
I'm guessing, but I think it is unlikely you are fresh as a daisy." Lifting one arm, I stiffed myself, concluding that he might be right.
"Okay, I'll shower before my folks get up." "Good idea. Scrape that fuzz off your face also."
"I am not shaving, Skippy. My stubble stays until my leave is over." The truth is, me not shaving was a form of protest against being second-guessed by a bunch of bureaucrats who had never been off-world.
"Ugh, I tried to give you advice about girls, but the last thing I need is advice from a beer can."
The next day, I drove down to Bangor with two old buddies and met three guys I knew from serving with the Maine National Guard during the first winter after Columbus Day. We went for pizza, then they took me to a gentleman's club. I should explain, this type of club is not a place where gentlemen meet to discuss the stock market over cigars and cognac. This place was more like, let's call it the ballet. Girls dance there, if you know what I mean. Ordinarily, seeing girls I couldn't touch after being away from Earth for so long would have gotten me more depressed than charged up. But before going to the ballet, we pre-gamed at a couple bars, so I was well supplied with alcohol and we all had a good time. At least I was having a good time until a waitress served us drinks, and damn it, I recognized her because we went to high school together. That was awkward. Or it was at first. No, Stacy didn't dance at the club, she just served drinks, although the outfit she wore left little to the imagination. My buddies bragged to her about how I was a space soldier, even after I begged them to shut up. We were drawing attention, and my ever-watchful dark suit-wearing security detail were inching closer to us. Stacy wrote her number on a napkin and told me to call her so we could catch up on old times. Then we bailed out of the club to go bar hopping. It was sometime after 1 a.m. when I crashed into the hotel bed. At 10:25 the next morning, I was rudely awakened by a text message. It was from Stacy. Did I have plans for lunch? I had to think about it. My buddies had all left because they had to work, plus they hadn't gotten hammered the previous night like I did. In my defense, it had been a while since I went bar hopping. Since all you perverts out there want to know, yes, I went to lunch with Stacy. We sat at an outdoor table and caught up on each other's lives. She moved away right after high school, and I hadn't seen her in years. She told me about her life, and I told her the official cover story about my life. Even trying to make my life sound uninteresting by describing how dull it is to be stuck as a passenger inside a ship in deep space, she wanted to know more. After lunch, we walked along the waterfront, then she had to run some errands and get ready for work. Having three feds in dark suits following me everywhere was not great for romance. Stacy told me she'd like to get together on one of her days off, and we made plans. But I explained I might be going somewhere with my folks, and she understood.
When she left, she gave me a kiss on the cheek, and there was a twinkle in her eyes. I think Stacy dug my manly bad boy stubble. To give my parents a continued break and to visit my sister, and partly to annoy my security team, I went to Boston for a couple of days after my overnight in Bangor. A security team went with me. This time they smartened up by dressing in casual civilian clothes and hopefully looking like typical tourists. With my accent, I could pass as a local, and with my Red Sox baseball cap pulled down low and sunglasses, nobody recognized me. Or if they did, they left me alone. It was awkward trying to relax with three armed guards shadowing my every move. After a day together, we got comfortable with each other, and they didn't hover as much. One of the feds was a woman. She stuck by my side, which made it look like we were a couple. Yes, she was cute, and I wouldn't have minded, you know, getting to know her better. But she was married with a 3-year-old at home. I was on my best behavior. We went to Faneuil Hall Marketplace. I was craving cookies from the Boston Chipyard and wanted a batch to bring to my sister and a boyfriend or fiancé or whatever he was. Walking across the square in front of City Hall, I noticed two people wearing silver satin-type robes over their jeans, and I automatically turned away. They were earnestly passing out pamphlets to anyone passing by. I didn't know what their deal was, and I didn't care. My strategy didn't work. After I turned left to cut across Congress Street near the Sam Adams statue, I ran into two more of the Silver Robe Brigade. Before I could wave a hand that I wasn't interested, a beaming woman with silver strands of lace woven into her hair thrust a pamphlet at me. "Sir, have you accepted the Skippy as your lord and savior?" I froze in place, gaping at her. When my vapor-locked brain could think again, I held up one finger. No, not that finger. I mean an index finger. Give me one moment, please. I'll be right back. Signaling to my security detail that everything was cool, I stepped around the corner and tapped my Z-phone while it was still in my pocket. Keeping my tone light and listening through the earpiece, I called the beer can. "Oh, Skippy?"
"Hey, Joe, what's up?"
"Damn, the way you described those chocolate chip cookies almost makes me wish I was a biological trash bag so I could eat them."
"Uh-huh. Hey, change of subject. This is..." I forced myself to chuckle. "This is kind of a crazy question. Did you start a religion about yourself?"
"What?"
His voice went up to a screech so loud I winced from the earpiece blasting my hearing.
"A religion? Please! No way, dude. That's a good one. Where did you get a crazy idea like that?"
"From two people wearing silver robes and asking if I have accepted the Skippy as my lord and savior."
"Oh, crap. You saw that, huh? Damn it. Joe, it's not a religion. It's more of a cult."
"A cult?
Well, unless a cult is a bad thing, in which case it is totally not a cult. It's a club. Yeah, a club, like, the Rotary. Nobody hates the Rotary Club, right?"
"The Rotary Club? Are those the guys with the funny hats who ride tiny cars in parades?"
"No, those are the Shriners, Joe."
"Whatever. So your club is sort of a charity?"
"Charity?
Yeah, exactly. Except in my club, people have to worship me and give me money."
"Neat, huh? There are already over a dozen babies named after me, including girls, which is weird, but what can you do, right?"
"Oh, shit." I bonked my head on the City Hall building.
"Skippy, this time you've gone too far. You revealed yourself to people? We're supposed to be keeping everything about yourself secret. You could get me in huge trouble."
"Relax, dude. People think I am a mystical guru from Nepal or some other faraway exotic place. My name is Skippy Azurmoney."
"Sounds impressively mystical, huh?"
"Your guru name is Skippy Has Your Money?" I pronounced it slowly.
"Clever of me, huh? Monkeys are too stupid to notice."
"I'm a monkey, and I noticed.
You're supposed to be from Nepal?"
"It won't work if I say I'm from Nebraska, Joe. My followers think I have special powers to perceive the cosmos or some bullshit like that. I have a brochure if you want to..."
"You have a brochure?"
"I don't want a brochure. How long has this been going on?"
"It started about, 5 months after we left for the Paradise Mission that took freaking forever. The submind I left behind to keep an eye on things here got bored, or it took a very broad interpretation of the instructions I left. Don't worry, I absorbed that damn submind right after we returned. I am not risking another Nagatha incident.
Anywho, apparently, without me knowing, so it is totally not my fault, the sub-mind kind of started helping people it liked chatting with on the Internet. At first, it truly was helping, because, after all, I programmed the stupid thing, and I am the very embodiment of helpfulness and charity. Oh, yeah, I made a gagging sound. He ignored me. Then, people who were helped told their friends and family about the Skippy, and, well, it kind of grew from there. Donations started pouring in, and of course it would be impolite to refuse to take money from my worshipful and devoted followers. Skippy, ripping off gullible people is not, hey, I do not rip off my faithful followers, unlike those asshole televangelists who are all over the freaking place ripping off gullible morons on TV so they can buy bigger private jets. I deliver a solid value for the money. My followers send in donations, I call them offerings, and in return, they get money out of nowhere deposited into their bank accounts, or charges suddenly disappear from their credit cards, or, if they truly have love for the Skippy in their hearts, and they get super lucky, they win the lottery. You rigged the lottery? I'm guessing from your tone that is a bad thing, so of course not. No way, Jose. If it's not a bad thing, then sure, why not? Somebody has to win, right? Why shouldn't the winner be a deserving person who has embraced the philosophy of the Skippy and follows the true path of righteousness? Philosophy? Righteousness? What, pray tell, is this marvelous life-changing philosophy? I haven't quite got all the details worked out yet. You know, love the Skippy with all your heart and, don't be a dick and some other happy bullshit like that. I'm working on it, he added defensively. Your religion is based on don't be a dick? Hey, that's a good basis for a religion. I actually cannot argue with you about that. Damn it, the beer can was right. If everyone avoided being a dick, the world would be a better place. How big is this cult of yours? Club, Joe. It's a club, remember? Right now I have 73,484... Nope, wait. Now it's 86. 87. Okay, fine. Does the government know about this? Not yet, but it's kind of a pain, because the sub-mind I left here has to keep purging records from government databases. Those jackasses handing out pamphlets in front of City Hall are going to blow my cover for sure. Bunch of jerks. Yeah, they are the jerks. Hey, you don't see me walking around in silly robes and bothering people, do you? My security team was getting anxious about me conspicuously having an animated conversation in public. Plus, two of the silver-robed devotees of Skippyism had edged closer and might be able to hear my talking. I lowered my voice and cupped a hand over my mouth. We will talk about this later, I hissed at him. Crap, damn it. Am I in trouble again? Preachers scam people all the time and nobody does anything about it. This is different. Different how? He asked in the voice of a 3-year-old, asking why the sky is blue rather than orange. I did not have an answer for him. Please, please, do not do anything else that is morally questionable for, like, the next 2 days, okay? That depends. How close can I get to the questionable line? Far, far away from it. Oh, crap. Hey, in that case, you should stay off the Internet for a while, huh? Take a break from news feeds. I'm going to eat so many cookies that I fall into a calorie coma and forget all about this. Oh, goody! Have fun. Talk to you later. Dinner with my sister was good. She cooked spaghetti and meatballs. It was awkward because a fiancé was there. He was a good guy, I guess. It was just weird for me that while I was away, my sister met some guy and now they were living together and semi-officially engaged. My sister had to work the next day. She needed to get work caught up before we went on a family trip, so I was planning to take the ferry over to Cape Cod, but it was pouring down rain and I wasn't feeling it. I told the security team to take me home. They were so happy to get me away from crowded Boston that an army helicopter took us from Logan Airport to my hometown, where it was easier to provide security for me. Adams called the next night, and we debriefed about the past couple days. I did not mention meeting Stacy, and I felt vaguely guilty about leaving out that info. It was weird being in Bangor, you know? Everything looked so normal, like Columbus Day never happened. The Kristang never hit Bangor. It isn't important enough. There's an interstellar war raging out there, and people down here are just going on about their lives. Even my buddies from the National Guard, they said all the right things, but they haven't been out there. They don't know what it's like. Now we're back home, and it doesn't feel like I belong here anymore.
I know what you mean. My friends wanted to take me shopping, she said without enthusiasm. Buying clothes seemed so frivolous. I was in a store, and my friends were trying on outfits, and I looked around at people buying clothes, and I thought, I have nothing in common with these people. They have no idea what is really going, what we went through out there.
Yeah, same here. It was good to talk with someone who understood how I was feeling. Even with my parents, I was having trouble reconnecting. Small talk at the dinner table was so small, nothing they talked about meant anything to me. It was that way when I came back from Nigeria before Columbus Day. One day I'm on patrol in the bush, worried about landmines and IEDs and getting shot at. A couple days later, I'm in my hometown and people expected me to act like nothing was different. I kind of hated those people back then, resented how happy they were.
How did you handle it?
There was a catch in her voice. Damn it, I wish we weren't talking on the phone from 1,000 miles away. I wish she was there with me. My mother helped. She knew sitting around wasn't doing me any good. And my father took me out fishing, and that was good. And then he had to go back to work. My mother told me a neighbor needed help putting a new roof on his barn, and I could earn some money on the side, so I worked with our neighbor for a day, tearing off the old roof and putting on new shingles. It kept me busy, and it got me back to doing something normal, you know?
I know. I do.
Maybe we've been gone so long, been through so much, that we don't belong here.
That's not it.
We need time, sir. Are there any roofs up there you can fix? That made me laugh. I'll look into it tomorrow, Adams.
Thanks.
It's good to talk with someone who understands. You know what bothers me the most?
What's that?
The people we lost along the way. I wrote letters to their families. I wanted to call them or go to their homes and tell them how much they meant to us. I can't. The government won't allow it. Their families are told they died in a training accident.
Someday, sir. Someday you can tell their families the truth. The cover story can't hold forever. My friends were asking me about rumors that are very close to the truth.
Yeah, mine too. I hate lying to my folks.
You still want me aboard the Dutchman for a couple days, sir?
I would appreciate it, Gunny. There are a bunch of strangers crawling all over the ship now. We need 2 or 3 pirates up there at all times to make sure the newbies don't break anything or press the wrong button and, like, vaporize Chicago. Technically, I wasn't requesting her to go upstairs, as I had no authority. So Skippy made the request for a skeleton crew of experienced pirates to be aboard at all times, and we were rotating people up and down to reduce the strain. It should only be for 2 or 3 days, the week after next. They won't let me go up there. Sorry.
It's okay, she assured me.
Then she laughed.
This is a good time to get away. My aunt has been trying to set me up with men from our church.
You're not interested? I asked, and berated myself, stupid, 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 for how hopefully I asked that question.
In the guys your aunt likes, I mean? They're all nice enough, probably. My aunt has been trying to get me to settle down for years. She does that with everyone. She is a professional amateur matchmaker.
Okay, sir. I'll do it.
Do it?
There was a lump in my throat.
Let your aunt set you up on a date?
No, she laughed. I'll go up to the Dutchman next week. It will be great to get away for a few days. The Marine Corps has assigned a security detail to follow me everywhere, and they are very polite and very disciplined, and I am sick of it already.
Ah, good, yeah. The feds up here are wearing out their welcome.
Skippy will send a dropship for you next week. The conversation wound down from there. I felt better afterward, and slept pretty well that night, without any dreams that I remember. Skippy called me in the kitchen the next afternoon.
Hey, Joe, are you going to, what are you doing?
Getting something for lunch, Skippy.
I see that. My question is why you are not enjoying another delicious and nutritious fluffernutter.
Oh, I had a fluffernutter for breakfast this morning.
You have to be careful not to get too much nutrition, or your body gets spoiled.
My father's grilling steaks tonight, so I don't want a big lunch. I'll have some cheese and these stoned wheat thin crackers my mom bought. I held the box up so he could see better, wherever he was looking from. See? You know these are stoned wheat thins because when you put them on a plate, they're all like, wow, man, the world is so big outside that box. Look at all the colors. Oh, I'm so hungry.
Joe, he sighed. I have no words. How the hell has your species survived so long?
You were going to ask me a question.
I was. Now I can't remember, because after talking with you, my higher brain is curled up in a ball, crying.
Oh, well, I mumbled through a mouthful of cracker, waving a hand in the air. Let me know how that works for you, okay?
Ooh! Now I remember, he shouted excitedly. Quiet, I hissed, keeping my voice low with one eye on the security team trailer in the driveway.
What is it?
You, my friend, are a genius.
Okay.
Damn, Joe, he spit the words out in disgust. You are supposed to act all humble and ask what you did to earn admiration from someone as awesome as me.
Let's pretend I did.
Good enough.
Okay, I'll bite. What happened?
I followed your advice. First, I created an online avatar using a hipster douchebag starter kit and...
Wait, a what?
A starter kit, Joe. Come on, try to keep up. You know, that stupid haircut, a handlebar mustache that is all the rage with hipsters this week, a vinyl record collection of alternative bands no one has ever heard of, a full-color Flintstones tattoo that is so uncool it's cool, a checkerboard shirt with a leather vest over it. Your basic hipster. Then, I accessorized, like adding or subtracting sideburns, depending on whether sideburns are in style that day.
Oh, sure. We've been away from Earth a long time, Skippy. Are you sure that info is current?
Oh, yeah. I trolled social media groups popular with douchebags of the hipster variety. Of course, none of them will admit to being a hipster, which is how I know I hit the hipster douchebag motherload. Anyway, my hipster avatar admitted to a new addiction to weird chapstick flavors that are ironically uncool. He claimed to have bought them at a funky shop in Brooklyn that only true hipsters know about.
Joe... It went viral.
I sold out the entire warehouse. I can't make them fast enough. I'm rich, baby!
Didn't you already have plenty of money you stole from banks?
Oh, great. Way to harsh my buzz, dude.
Sorry. That is awesome, Skippy. It's great that you're going legit.
Oh, yeah, about that. Back when I thought I would be stuck with a warehouse full of crap I couldn't sell... The warehouse suffered a truly unfortunate, devastating fire. Weird, huh? Good news is, I am fully insured. Plus, you know, I snuck all the product out the back door before the fire.
Skippy, you can't go starting fires to collect insurance.
Why not? I considered other disasters, like an earthquake, but my warehouse is in Central Florida, and an earthquake would look really suspicious.
I slapped my forehead.
You are missing the point, Skippy.
Well, apparently I am.
I paid the insurance premium, Joe. You can't fake a fire. That's fraud.
Really?
Well, isn't insurance basically like a casino where the house has an edge over...
No, it is not like a casino, I insisted.
Truthfully, I was kind of vague on the subject. I had insurance for driving and life insurance from the military, but I had never owned a house or anything else worth insuring.
Don't ask me why. I gritted my teeth, hoping he would not demand an explanation I didn't have.
Okay. Geez, what a pain. Well, damn it, my lawyers have already filed the claim. I can't retract it now. What can I...
Aha!
Okay, I fixed the problem.
Fixed it?
How?
Easy peasy. I transferred into the insurance company's bank account an amount equal to what they will pay me for my claim, plus... Because I am a generous guy and I want to do the right thing,
and because I want you to shut the hell up about it, he added under his breath, I added a little bonus payment. Presto! Moral dilemma is resolved.
Where did you get that money?
Oh, crap. If you got upset about a little insurance fraud, you do not want to know where that money came from.
Oh, boy.
Hey, I called to tell you the good news about my first business venture and to thank you. How did this turn into Skippy being the bad guy?
Shit, could we go back to the part where I'm a genius and you rescued your business and forget all the rest?
Good idea.
Sometimes, really most of the time, with Skippy, it is best not to ask too many questions.
Gunnery Sergeant Adams, who, by the way, had her promotion confirmed when we landed, was not the only pirate I talked with. With most of them, I used a regular phone and avoided any sensitive subjects.
With the few people who had Z-phones and could talk freely, we spoke our minds about things that made us unhappy since returning to Earth. Adams and I were not the only people feeling disconnected from humanity. Even the science team was having trouble adjusting, which busted my theory that the issue was confined to military personnel. My thought had been that being in the military was different from civilian life, and we had been subject to nearly non-stop military procedures, customs, and discipline for well over a year, so it made sense that the Spec Ops teams and pilots needed an adjustment period. But the science team, who had often worn T-shirts and sweatpants aboard the ship, told me they also felt the distance from humanity upon return and were having trouble reconnecting even with their families. My purpose in talking with as many pirates as I could was to check on them, let them know their former commander cared, and give them someone they could talk to. Because of our shared experience, there were some things only a pirate could understand. Eventually, I steered the conversations around to a topic of great interest to me, whether each person would be willing to rejoin the crew when the Flying Dutchman went out again, whenever and for however long that was. It did not surprise me that most people, with various levels of regret, told me no. Dr. Friedlander turned me down, and I completely understood. He had been on two missions already, both of which lasted longer than anticipated, and he simply could not subject his wife to another extended absence. The past couple of months before we returned, she had begun to accept that her husband might be dead, and she was not the only spouse or family member who had assumed they would never see their beloved pirate again. The entire science team decided against another trip aboard the ship, and they had a very good reason for not signing on to another mission. With Skippy now beginning to share technology, the science team would be most useful to humanity by remaining on Earth and applying the shared knowledge. I agreed with that idea, and did not press anyone to sign up for another voyage. Other people had their own reasons. Lieutenant Commander Williams had also been on two missions, the last as leader of our SEALs team, and after a rocky start to our relationship, we had worked very well together. Williams would not be returning for two reasons, one professional and one personal. Professionally, the Navy wanted Williams to remain on Earth so he could train SEALs in lessons and tactics learned aboard the Dutchman. Personally, he could not leave his wife and family again. His wife had given birth to a baby girl while we were on Gingerbread. He felt the need to justify his decision. Colonel, none of the pirates called me by my permanent army rank. This last time, all we had to do was verify the Theranin weren't sending another surveyor ship to Earth. I figured it would be a quick recon mission. 2 or 3 months, tops. That's what I told my wife. Williams, stop right there. I thought it would be a quick mission also. You don't need to justify anything to me. You and your family have sacrificed enough, and the Navy needs you here for knowledge transfer. I get it. Really. Of our Spec Ops team leaders, only newly promoted Lieutenant Colonel Smythe was able or willing to sign up for another mission. All the others would be staying on Earth so their home outfits could learn from their experience, and all of them sounded relieved about those orders to remain dirtside for a while. Smythe was divorced and an adrenaline junkie, and when we talked via Z-phone, he was determined to do everything he could to prevent the UN from deciding to contact the Jarraptha and surrender. I warned him not to speak too loudly on that subject or he could find himself sidelined. A long conversation with our former fearless leader Hans Chotek had cautioned me against speaking my mind about matters of policy. It surprised me that Skippy had bothered to smuggle a Z-phone to Hans Chotek, but the beer can had warmed up to Count Chocula, or at least developed a grudging respect. Chotek told me the UNEF member states were in a panic about the Maxolks sending ships to Earth, and he expected there would soon be a vote in the UN General Assembly about whether to contact the Jarraptha. With deep regret, he told me there was nothing he could do about it. He had lost his official position and had no influence, not even with the Austrian government. I guess when you are a career diplomat, starting a civil war that will likely kill millions of sentient beings is considered an unforgivable sin. There was no point asking if he was willing to sign up for another mission. No way would the UN trust him to keep me in check again. We chatted a bit, with him thanking me for saying good things about him and his judgment in my official report. In turn, he praised me for never giving up on finding a way to fix Skippy while we were trapped in the Roach Motel. I have to say, when I heard you were planning a golf course on Gingerbread, I had doubts, I told him honestly. Colonel Bishop, he yawned. I had forgotten that it was the middle of the night in Austria. Do you know why I was planning to build a golf course there? Because, I answered slowly, you like golf? No, he laughed. I planned it because making plans to build something so mundane and frivolous as a golf course would signal to people that life on Gingerbread was going to be normal and recognizable if we were to be trapped on that planet for a very long time. You do not plan a golf course unless you are confident about your prospects for survival.
Huh. I hadn't thought about that. That was clever. I used Skippy's highest word of praise.
My hope was somehow we would never need to use those plans.
We did anyway, I pointed out.
During the long months when dropships were flying around scouring the junkyard for parts Skippy could use to clutch together a working starship, half of the crew was on Gingerbread at any time. To avoid boredom, we had built a soccer field, a cricket ground, and a very rudimentary 12-hole golf course. Technically, the course had 12 greens, but we set it up so each green had multiple tees and approaches, giving us a back-and-forth 36 holes that could be played. After my down months on Gingerbread, I was in good shape from racing around the soccer field. I still sucked at golf, and I still did not understand the inscrutable rules of cricket, even after playing dozens of matches.
I'm glad we did. It gave us something to do. It kept our minds from worrying Skippy couldn't fix the ship.
That conversation gave me a new level of respect for the guy, although I still thought of him as Count Chocula.
One loss that really hurt, more than I expected, was Jennifer Sims. A logistics officer, also newly promoted to lieutenant colonel, told me that after two very long missions she would not be returning to the Merry Band of Pirates.
I never expected any of this, she explained, even though I assured her no explanation was needed. Colonel Bishop, I want to get married someday. I want to start a family. And that won't happen while I'm flying around the galaxy. The ship will be in good hands. We know now how to use the hydroponics to grow fresh food, and I worked out the logistics requirements to support the crew on an extended mission.
You want to start a family, even with the Max Hulks sending two ships here?
Yes, sir. Think of that as a big vote of confidence that somehow you, Skippy, and a barrel of monkeys will think of something to keep the bad guys away from Earth.
Crap. If there wasn't pressure on me before, there sure was after that conversation.
Hearing that if I took the Dutchman out again, it might be with almost an entirely new crew, had me depressed.
No. The important question was not when the Dutchman would be going out again. That was pretty much a guarantee. The important question was whether I would be going with the ship.
No, that wasn't right either. I could not imagine UNEF Command sending the Flying Dutchman on any sort of mission without Skippy, and despite that little shithead being untrustworthy, he would demand that I go with him.
As I had been told at Wrightpat, no way would UNEF Command give me another shot at commanding a mission, so the best I could hope for was to serve as an advisor to a new captain. What made it worse was the prospect that the next mission might be one I absolutely disagreed with, even though I had nothing to offer as a realistic or even far-fetched alternative.
It never occurred to me that UNEF Command might be planning to send the ship out on a mission without me,